Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 16th of Nisan, which is in Eretz Yisrael, the first day of Chol HaMoed Pesach. But I found the tshuva that makes no reference to it whatsoever, because it's sort of, I guess, maybe for some Torah people, it's just, I mean, I'm sure they were celebrating Pesach and eating matzah and aware of that, but there was also Torah to be studied of a more general variety. And today's tshuva is actually, it's a second tshuva about a topic that he first looked at in an earlier tshuva. So we're going to see the early tshuva first, then we'll see the second tshuva, which is dated the 16th of Nisan. We'll get there. But we'll start with Shu'at Mishpatei Uziel in the first volume, Orech Chaim Siman Yud, the 10th Orech Chaim response in the thing. It's about Hilchos Shabbos. It's about milking cows, because here's the problem that occurred. There was a outbreak. This tshuva at the end is dated Tammuz Tofresh Pei Vav. It was Tammuz of 1926. So, and there apparently was some kind of an outbreak, an infectious disease outbreak, and therefore the government, the British mandatory government, prohibited the inhabitants of Arab villages from where the disease was found from going into the Jewish settlements because they wanted to stop the spread of disease, right? One of the most effective ways to battle disease that was actually discovered in the context of the Black Death, which came back to Europe over 400 years. It came back every 10 years or so periodically, and it killed people. They never found a way to cure it at all. They just found a way to quarantine it so that it didn't spread. That's eventually how they conquered things like Ebola in our times, is that if you quarantine it effectively, then it has no manner of spreading, and then it dies out. So here, the British mandatory government was, I guess appropriately, trying to make sure that Arabs who were in infected villages didn't go to other places, and therefore they couldn't get to the Jewish settlements. The problem with that was that those workers had been helpful in terms of several things, but including they would do the milking of the cows on Shabbos. At the time, if you had a farm, farms had cows, and those cows needed to be milked. So Uziel points out, if you leave the cows unmilked until Motzei Shabbat, I mean, let's say you said to yourself, I'll milk them Friday just before Shabbat, and I'll milk them Motzei Shabbat as soon as I can. He says, there's a good chance that they will be endangered, their lives will be endangered. And aside from that, if they're not milked, their milk will dry up. They thought there's a good danger that that's true. I don't know if it's true for all the cases, but sufficient a number of cases would be a problem that was a big problem. And it would, as Rav Uziel says, it would completely destroy the dairy farm industry, which was a key piece of one's livelihood for hundreds, if not thousands, of families. These families and their workers and, you know, all their employees, their livelihoods depend on it. And therefore, we want to know, this is the question that was given to Rav Uziel, is there a way to permit milking cows on Shabbat until we can get our Arab workers back, our non-Jewish workers back, and they can do it for us? And then they said, if not, that we can milk it and use the milk. What about milking the cows and throwing away the milk, right? Or milking it in such a way that it immediately goes le'ibud, meaning there is some thought that if you milk something, if you do an action on Shabbos and it has no value, it doesn't produce anything for you, maybe it doesn't qualify as a full melacha. So that's the alminat lashlicha le'ibud, was maybe to get away in that you're not really milking them for what you need it for on Shabbos, and therefore maybe that should be okay. So that was the question they asked. So some underlying part of this is going to be, as Uziel says, the importance of the milk industry to the Israeli economy, to the economy of those families at the time. It's something to think about, whether it's the whole economy that's affected, and that's why it's a problem, and that's why you can look for a kula for it. Or is it enough that it's an industry that affects the livelihoods of hundreds or thousands of people, meaning in Israel, where today, thank God, there are 6 million Jews or more, or I forget the exact numbers, but there are millions and millions, 5 million Jews, whatever millions of Jews there are living in Israel. So you have an industry that affects, you know, 30,000 people. That's not an insignificant number of people, but it's not the backbone in any way of the Israeli economy. And therefore the question would be, does this question apply in the exact same way? So let's firstly see his answers, and then we're going to think more about that perhaps. So his answer is, first, let's review, he says, Ikar istur chaliva b'Shabbat. What makes milking cows prohibited on Shabbat? Is it a Torah prohibition, a Torah prohibition? Is it a rabbinic prohibition? So he points out there's a Braita in Masechet Shabbat on Daf Tzadihei, which talks about HaCholev, HaMechabetz. It groups a couple of different melachot. So Mechabetz, I think, is like turning things into cheese, turning milk into cheese. Cholev is milking. And so it says the end of that list is B'Shabbat Chayev Chatat, is the words of Rabbi Eliezer. And Chachamim say that it's a shvut. It is a derabbanan. It's a rabbinic prohibition. Now, if it's only a rabbinic prohibition, then that leaves much more room for various kinds of leniencies, as we will see. So Rashi there says that what I had the quote, but I just skipped it because the point is that the implication of Rashi is that Rashi understands that even Chachamim thought that milking was d'oraita, was a Torah prohibition. The debate was about mechabe to merabe to sweeping and something with the floor where you, the question is whether you're digging up the floor or not by the way that you're sweeping it up, and that maybe that was a shvut. But Rashi seems to think that cholev is aser d'oraita on a Torah level. That's because the Gemara there says that cholev is mishum mifarik. That cholev is an example or type of mifarik. Mifarik, Rashi explains, is that you're taking food out of a place where it was covered, meaning the milk was inside the cow, and now you're taking outside the cow. You're not separating from the cow because there's a good reason to think that it was never really part of the cow. It's just that it was covered up within the cow, and now we've gotten it out. And Rashi sees that as a tolada of dash, as a toladot, or if there are broad categories of Malachan Shabbat, each of those important categories has subcategories to them that are also prohibited on the right to level. They're just not named as the original Malacha. So dash is when we separate wheat from its chaff, when you grind wheat so that the different parts, so that's getting the wheat out of what covered it. So Rashi is saying that he thinks cholev, he understands the Gemara to be saying that cholev is a type of mifarek, taking food out of where it was covered, and that is a tolada of dash. Tell us if they're agreed that with Rashi's understanding, and they said that this halacha follows the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, who held that yesh disha below gidule shalom gidule karka. There's a debate in the Gemara and then among Rishonim as to how we paskin about whether this whole category of dash applies to things that aren't plants, meaning dash originally is clearly about wheat or grain, and you thresh the grain to get the wheat out of it to make into flour. That process of separating food from where it was covered up, does it only apply to things that grow on the ground? So let's say maybe we don't postulate this way, but I remember my father Allah was telling me about, I think the kids are Shulchan Aruch, somebody said that peeling an orange on Shabbos is a problem of dash, because you're getting the orange out of the thing that covered it, and that should be a problem of dash. So that would be all gidulei karka, but cows aren't considered gidulei karka. Now, it happens to be, there's a very well-known tells what the people like to refer to, or tells us to suggest, based on another Gemara that's on our issue, tells us to suggest that maybe, in fact, we do treat animals like gidulei karka, because they get their growth from eating off the ground. Maybe that's considered gidulei karka. Problem is, so if you follow this line of reasoning, for a Vuziel, you'd have a problem, because cholev, then milking, would be a complete d'oraita, according to Rashi and Tosfot. It's a tolda et mefarek, which is a tolada of dash, and it's a problem. So here's where it gets interesting. He says, but if you look in the Yerushalmi, you can see very clearly the Rabbanan hold that there's not an issur d'oraita when it comes to cholev, when it comes to milking. And he says, a svara no tenet, which is a very interesting phrase for him to use. He says, and it makes sense that they don't hold that way. Sheshnei Talmudim shavim bazeh, that they agree, the two, the Yerushalmi and the Bavli, that Rabbanan think that cholev is shvut, because that's what the whole list had said anyway. And then it happens to be, if you look in the Shulchan Aruch doesn't mention cholev in specific. He just paskins that you can tell a non-Jew to be cholev because the milk is mitzara. Now, theoretically, I could have said, well, that means that it's derabanan, and that's why you can tell a non-Jew to do it, because we don't usually tell non-Jews to do the right things on Shabbos, even if there's tzar. Mashma, though, he says, shemot lo afilu b'shabbat v'afilu l'tzorach Yisrael, even if the Jew needs it. But if cholev is also in a Torah level, then you shouldn't have allowed doing it by a non-Jew, as the Shulchan Aruch paskin anywhere, that it's only on a derabanan issue that we can all of a sudden say, once and prohibition is derabanan, and telling a non-Jew to do things is derabanan, so then we can start combining leniencies, as long as there's a mixat choli, or some kind of a real need. Mixat choli means some kind of an illness, or there's some kind of a real need, right? Or there's a mitzvah there, so that's when you can do these kinds of things. In other words, Rav Uziel is claiming that for all that the simple way to read the Gemara, meaning by simple, I mean that you naturally look to Rashi, and when Tosfos confirm Rashi, you assume that that's the way to read the Gemara, is that milking is a Torah prohibition. Turns out when you look at the Yerushalmi, there's reason to think that it's not a Torah prohibition according to Rabbanan who we follow. And then you look at the Shulchan Aruch's Psak, it would seem like the Shulchan Aruch's Psak confirms that he took it to be a Rabbanan, since the Shulchan Aruch does allow asking a non-Jew to do for us. Because, as I said, you don't do that with Torah prohibitions. And not only that, he points to Iran, where the Iran says you can't. But the reason why Chazal said you can't put out a fire on Shabbos even by a non-Jew, even when there's loss of money involved, even though you don't need... introduce this a little bit better. The Ran is talking about there's a halacha in the Gemara. We don't follow this halacha anymore because we assume today that all fires are inherently life-threatening, and therefore we allow putting out fires, I think, in general. But theoretically, if one had a fire where one was confident that there was no danger to life, even if there's a great loss of money involved, we think that putting out a fire is generally done right. There's a Torah prohibition, therefore we don't allow it. And we don't allow it even by asking a non-Jew to put it out. Of course, if they come along and do it themselves, that's fine. We might be able to hint to them, but we're not allowed to ask them to do it. So the Ran pointed out that that's kind of odd, because for all that we say that it's Doraita, and it is Doraita, it seems to be in the Gemara that it's only Doraita when it's what's called a malacha hatzricha lagufa. A malacha hatzricha lagufa is where you do the malacha for the purpose for which you wanted it. I mean, you do it intending it for that purpose. So, for example, the classic malacha hatzricha lagufa is you dig a hole and you want the dirt. So the fact is, digging a hole is an act of bone on Shabbos, an act of building something or making something, like you're constructing something, the hole in this case. But you're not doing it for the hole, you're doing it for the dirt that you wanted for some other purpose. That's a malacha hatzricha lagufa. When it comes to putting out a fire, what's the malacha hatzricha lagufa? So the Gemara seems to pass them. The malacha hatzricha lagufa is only when you put out a fire because you want the coal that's left over, meaning in their times, let's say you had a material that you were going to turn into coal or something like that, you're going to turn into a charred end, let's say a wick. They're going to be easy to light the next time, so you put it out, but you're putting it out because you want the blackened wick. But other than that, we usually think it's a malacha hatzricha lagufa, and most Rishonim hold that malacha hatzricha lagufa, malacha that you do, you don't need it for its traditional purpose, is considered a drabanan. So if a fire, you know, let's say, out in an open area, dry open area where there's no fuel for the fire, so it's not going to spread, you know, I have a valuable wooden chest, and for some reason it catches fire, and there's a, you know, and I know that I could run and catch a non-Jew who could put it out for me, so we say you're not allowed to do that because it's just a financial loss and I have to just bear the financial loss. But the question is, why? It's a Drabanan. So often in cases of Drabanan, what I ask a non-Jew to do is a double Drabanan. In cases of loss, I'm allowed to do it. So why here am I not allowed? So the Ran explained, the chol davar she'ikar isuro de'oraita lehutar bo amira legoi. Any malacha that you have where it's, even if the form that I'm doing it right now is not a Doraita form, but the malacha itself is right to malacha. I mean, there's different ways that something can be Dorabanan. It can be Dorabanan because it's completely Dorabanan, or it can be a Doraita act, which I happen to be doing in a Dorabanan way. Right, like a malacha shenet tzrich legufa is a perfect example. Another perfect example would be, let's say, a chatzi shir might be, right, something that's under the, that's below the amount. Chatzi shir might be just deraita. But if, let's say, I do something shelo kedarka, I do something not in the usual way, so that's a derabanan. So maybe if I asked a non-Jew to do it in an unusual way, maybe that should be allowed. So the answer is, the Ran's answer is, we don't do that. If that's true, then why would the Shulchan Aruch allow milking a cow or asking a non-Jew to milk a cow for us on Shabbos? Unless we say that the Shulchan Aruch, in fact, agrees with what Uziel is trying to suggest, that in fact, milking is not a Doraita, even though Rashi and the Tosfos clearly thought that it was. We hold that it's not. Because we would say, they hold that Tisha doesn't apply other than to Gidulei Karak. It only applies in thin plants, things that grow from the ground, and an animal is not considered Gidulei Karak. So he's gotten us to the point where we consider it now a Drabanan. That's helped us somewhat. Now, let's see what are other ways that people had thought that you can make this mutar, could think of as mutar. One would be that it's a malach shen tzich legufa, and therefore it's a Drabanan, that could help, or if it could help us, even if it's Drabanan or not, it could help. And also there's mekalkel. So mekalkel is a principle in halacha, in Hilchot Shabbat. If I do something and it's completely destructive, we think of that as not being as prohibited, because it's destructive, it's not constructive, and the whole problem in Shabbat is melechet machshevet, is creating things on Shabbat. So the Brazil says he doesn't think either of those helps us in this case to find a heter that we need, because both of those categories, even if we accept them, only create a situation of patur v'alasur, that you're not liable for it, but you're not allowed to do it. We want it to be allowed, and that doesn't do that. So, and also he says, when it comes to mekalkel, it may be that by milking it onto the ground instead of into a pail, it's mekalkel in the sense that they get nothing out of a value out of the milking, but the act of milking isn't a mekalkel act, and that's where mekalkel comes into place. Mekalkel is when the act that would have been Shabbos prohibited, the act that would have been Shabbos prohibited, is itself a destructive act, like hitting somebody or tearing clothing, where the act itself is a mekalkel. And besides, the milking, even if we don't get any milk out of it, is a help to the animal, as we said, because we said the animal's in pain if we don't milk it, so it's helping the animal either way. So that's also a problem of that's not really a mekalkel. A simpler example is the Gemara in Shabbat on Kufhei talks about the question of a korea bechamato. So he says, "Hainami mitakenhu de ka'aved nachat ruach liyitzro." That you want to say. So the thought was, let's say somebody tears up clothing or something else because he's very angry, and it sort of relieves the pressure of his anger. So you want to say it's a mekalkel. If it's a mekalkel, right, then it's not prohibited on Shabbos. So the answer is, the Gemara says, but maybe it doesn't count as mekalkel because it's nachat ruach liyitzro. So therefore, he doesn't think any of those reasons would be enough to say we can milk the cows, because you're not doing anything. The milking of the cows is not kilkul, even if you let the milk go away, because it's not kilkul, because it's not destructive itself. It doesn't make it kilkul because it's good for the cow, and because nothing in the act is mekalkel, and therefore he thinks that's an issue. So now here's how he's going to get to the heter. So the heter that he offers is for other reasons. He says he thinks that we can conclude that really the prohibition of milking on Shabbos for Tosos and Rashi and the Ramban is midoraita. He thinks that for Tosos, even though Tosos agrees with Rashi's reading of it, eventually thinks that Tosos really thinks that it's damyan lemefarik, it's like it's mefarik. So then the Ramban thinks that too. And that's how the Ramban and the Ran paskin. And our Gemara, he thinks, fits what they say as opposed to Rashi. Says it was a very interesting phenomenon to watch. But he's also willing to say, I'm more convinced by the Ramban and the Ran than Rashi. And therefore, I think that we can say that milking is Durabanan. Once milking is Durabanan, he says there's this other really interesting avenue of permissibility, that since this milking is necessary for rebuilding Eretz Yisrael, for building up life and economy in Eretz Yisrael, and it's one of the foundations of settling in Israel, that maybe hundreds and maybe thousands of families get their livelihood from it, as we said before, and if you stopped it, then it would destroy, it would cause pain to the animals, and it might destroy that part of the economy, and sometimes they would die, and maybe whole settlements economies would be destroyed. Therefore, he says that we have a few principles of halacha. One principle of halacha is kedai Rabbi Shimon l'smoch alav b'shalat chak, that sometimes when you have a situation of pressure, when you have a situation where you're not finding your way to build a reasonable life within the halacha as it is, if you have even a lone opinion, sometimes we're allowed to follow that lone opinion in such shalat chak situations of pressure, even if the majority held against them. And that's why there's a Tosefta Idiot, that's why they mention in the Gemara and in the Mishnah these lone opinions, because they want you to know, fascinating idea, they want you to know that this is a legitimate halakhic consideration. Meaning, and I never thought of it until I saw it here in this Tshuva, meaning he's saying that when the Gemara includes those opinions, it's saying that's a real opinion. So the fact the majority holds the other way, and that Judaism is held the other way for, you know, hundreds of thousands of, or in thousands of years, doesn't mean that if you get to a Shadat Chak, you look around, you say, oh, that's also a valid opinion, and therefore in this Shadat Chak, I can use this valid opinion, this opinion. That can easily be abused. You're going to have people say it's a Shadat Chak when it's not. You're going to have people say, right? So that's a key question here. He's saying it's a Shadat Chak because the Israeli economy was so, in 1926, was so small, so early in its development, that if you took this away, then you'd have a different serious problem. So now, when we go back to my question that I raised before, what if today the same question comes up, and it affects the same number of thousands of families, but now in a country where you have 6 million people around, or 5 million people around, you have millions and millions of people around, maybe that would make it different, because then it's not, it's a Shadat Chak for them, but it's not a Shadat Chak for Eretz Yisrael in general. We're going to see this in a second more, we're going to see it even more so. So that would be, you could follow the opinions of the Tzura Banan. And then we also find Shembatsinu Shechitivu Shvut Dirabanan Mishum Hefsein Mamon. Right? We've seen that Shvut Dirabanan, there's a huge amount of monetary loss. There's cases in the Gemara where they permit them because of the loss of money. So there's a case of a pipe that has that developed things in it that are stopping the water from going through or contaminating the water. You can crush them with your feet on Shabbos if nobody sees you, because the loss of money was sufficient. The Chazal said we don't want the halacha to apply there. And then one more example of where you can allow a shvut d'rabbanan, a rabbinic prohibition, if it's going to help with the settling of Israel. So in the Gemara you have cases of somebody buys a field in Syria, it's like buying it in Yerushalayim, and they say in terms of what? In terms of, you can write the deed on Shabbos. Not you write the deed, you can have a non-Jew write the deed. And the Gemara says, even though telling a non-Jew to write is Amira Lenachri, is telling a non-Jew, asking a non-Jew to violate Shabbos for us, but it's asking the non-Jew to violate that's a rabbinic prohibition. The Gemara says, in Gittin, because of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, in order to allow for the settling of Israel, they didn't make the prohibition apply there. So in our case of milking, Rav Uziel says, we have all of these things. The animal pain and suffering is itself a financial loss because they won't do as well. When animals don't do as well, they don't produce as well, and they aren't as valuable. The settling of Eretz Yisrael is enough. So you have the monetary loss, you have the shvut, you have this. So he says that's fundamentally how you get around it. You get around it by saying this is rabbinic. That's following one opinion over others, but we're allowed to follow one opinion of others in Shadat Chak. Then once you're following the opinion that says it's rabbinic, then we have a couple of reasons: the loss of money involved and the interest in settling Eretz Yisrael that allow us to ignore rabbinic prohibitions. But he says these are the conditions upon my heter. I think it has to be done with a shinui. So he says whenever we are matir a shvut, whenever we allow a rabbinic prohibition, it's always with a shinui. And you do it differently than you do it in the ordinary way. And therefore, he says, you shouldn't do it by a dime. You should do it with a kli. You shouldn't milk with your hand. You should do it with some kind of a suction cup kind of a thing that you can do it, and that'll be a shinui. We're going to get into the next shiva, whether that's really considered a shinui, a changing of how it's done. We'll get there, but that's what he said here. At this time, I think probably most people at this time use their hands for milking, and he says you have to do it with a kli, with some kind of a tool. Second condition is you have to do it where people aren't going to see it. As we said, in terms of the pipe cleaning guy squishing things with his feet, he had to do a bitzina when nobody's around. And the third condition he sets is that it has to be that you can't have a non-Jew. If you can have a non-Jew do it, it's obviously much better. And the fourth condition is you can't do it all at once. That'll be another significant shinui. That'll be another significant change in how it's done. You can't do it all at once. You have to do it in the amounts that will relieve the pain of the animal. Right? If I milk the cow, as we usually do, morning and night, so yes, it relieves the pain of the animal, but I'm doing it that way because it's convenient for me. But if we're doing it because we're saying that the loss involved in the pain to the animal is sufficient to allow us to ignore the drabbanan, then we have to do it in such a way that we're making it clear that we're only doing it because of the pain to the animal. So if that's true, then you shouldn't do it all at once. You should do it in small amounts, enough to relieve the pain, then come back a few hours later, do it that way. So all those are the ideas that he has, and he often says when he comes up with relative radical idea, he says, I'm not passing in this way. I'm telling you my ideas. I think these ideas should be brought to other rabbis, and if the rabbis in general come to agree with me and this is a good idea, then we can follow it. So that's the first tshuva from 1926. Now we get to our second tshuva, which is in the third volume of Mishpatei Uziel, the Or HaChaim section, Siman Mem Tet, and it's about milking again. This is from Tet Zayin Nisan, the 16th of Nisan, and that's what we're doing it, of Chet Tzadi Reish Tov. As those of you who can read backwards know, this is 1938, but you don't use the letters Tuf Reish in their proper order because it spells out a word that is makes us unhappy or whatever, and unfortunately turned out to be the start of World War II, which ended up having a lot of that in it. So this is 12 years later, somebody writes him a letter about this milking idea, right? So he writes, so the Rav Uziel is responding to him, and he says, I appreciate that you agreed with me and you're writing to me about it and you want to help me, but when it comes to the fact that I said you should do it with a kli, with a tool, so this man had disagreed with him, and he had said, first of all, people generally milk with a tool, with a machine, on weekdays anyway, so that's not a shinui, right? So it's not a shinui. So Rav Uziel never really, really answers that. I think it might be that over the course of the intervening 12 years, the type of milk can change, then maybe he would say you should use a different kli on Shabbos or a different way of differentiating it. But then he says, and also, by the way, this man says, and milking with a machine causes a lot of tsar, causes a lot of pain to the animal, more than leaving the milk in, what the guy says. And so instead of saving him from, so part of the point was we're going to save the animals from the pain, he says, you're not saving them from the pain because the machine hurts them. So he says, I don't understand. It can't be both ways. You're telling me that they use machines all week long, and then you tell me the machines cause them more pain than leaving the milk in, but nobody would do that, right? Farmers wouldn't cause the animals more pain than they had before because it's a business for them. So he says, it doesn't make sense. So either you're wrong one way or the other. So he says, I was only talking about being mefarik la'achar yad, but also he says, I was also trying to find a way around not disagreeing with everybody who came before me, because everybody who came before me had only been speaking about milking by hand, and therefore I thought that if you did it by with the machine, that's a different case. We could say that they never spoke about that case, and therefore I could do it. And then the guy says, and also, he also says that when you do something different than you do it during the week, when you do something differently, or with the intent of making it different, that is enough to consider the shinui, even if some people do it that way during the week. That's what he claims, anyway. And that's what he says. And therefore, that was part of why he said it, to do it this way, to do it in a way that's different, with an intent to do it with a shinui. Then he adds, depending on the guy, he asked him, how many times do you need to milk it? He says, I didn't come to any conclusions on that because I didn't want to, first of all, I wasn't giving a psak. I thought we were going to talk about it with other rabbis. And it was just laying out the ways to do it. But if you want to know what I think that the answer is, if you do it 4 or 5 times a day, that should be enough, because it's clear that you're doing it in terms of getting rid of tzar bali chayim, in terms of getting rid of the pain to the animal, and therefore that would be enough, he thought. Now this man had suggested, maybe why don't we have minors under the age of bar mitzvah do it, because he thought that when it comes to minors, since it's a drabbanon, you can give them an iser in their hands. We can be the cause of them violating, it's not violation because they're minors, of them doing something which is ordinarily against the Torah. If Oziel says, he doesn't think it's true. He thinks the halakha psukah is, the set halakha is, that we might not always be required to stop kids from violating the Torah, but to give them in their hands something that's prohibited on the Rabbanon level, that's not our right to do. And we're also not allowed to make it, and this comes up for people who like have their kids turn on lights when they're not on, and this and this and this. Rabbi Uziel says he thinks it's prohibited to train a kid to be Mechal HaShabbos, or to give a kid cause to be Mechal HaShabbos, even at a Rabbanon level, because part of what we're supposed to be doing is educating to being Torah, to follow the Torah. Rabbi Uziel says, I think it's not even allowed when it's a child who has not reached the age of Chinuch, right? Even though he's not at the age of keeping the Torah, where we have to educate the Torah, we're still not allowed to make it common, regular, meaning you have a 3 or 4 year old, we don't want them getting into the habit of, let's say, turning on the TV and watching TV on Shabbos. I didn't do anything to it. I'm not required to stop them from doing things. Even though they're not at the age of Chinuch, we don't do such things. So therefore, Vuziel thinks that having a kid milk it, even if the kid were under the age of Chinuch, it's hard to imagine the kid under the age of Chinuch knows how to do milking, but let's say he did, he says he doesn't think that's going to help us at all. So the man who's writing to him had said, but I don't understand, because we have cases in the Gemara. For example, the Taz, and not just the Gemara in Halacha, the Taz says that he thinks that, let's say the shul is locked, and the key is somewhere else, and there's no Eru. He says you can have a kid bring the key. Since we don't have a Rosh Hashanah d'oraita, there's a whole discussion, but since we think we don't have a public place, so the carrying in public is a Darabana in general, that's how we build all the Eruvim that we do build. So the Taz held that since it's a Darabana, you're allowed to let the kid come and bring it. So that's an example, this man said, of giving the kid the idea of violating Shabbos. And then there's Mari Vile, who had said that anything that's a Dvar Mitzvah, we can have the kid do it on Shabbos. So this guy says, well, you told me that milking the cow is a Dvar Mitzvah, is an active mitzvah, in that it contributes to the settling of the land of Israel. So why not have the kid milk the cow? So the Raziel says, no, he thinks those cases were where the actions themselves were an act of mitzvah, meaning bring the key to open the shul. The bringing itself is a mitzvah. It's open. It's letting the shul open up. And other acts of mitzvah are acts of mitzvah themselves. I'm sorry, he also thinks that bringing the key is only katan shelo yigi lechinuch, who has not reached the age of chinuch yet. But once the katan reaches the age of chinuch, then his father has to educate him to Torah, so therefore he has to separate him from all these things. From all that, he says, he thinks that a kid, and these are the kids who are going to be able to would be able to milk the cows have reached the age of chinuch, and therefore the father has to train them not to violate Shabbos, and therefore just putting them to do it rather than other people is not allowed. Therefore, that's, and he's also part of, anyway, and it goes on a little bit more about Arivut, about his responsibility to be part of the Jewish people, but fundamentally, these were the ideas that Rav Uziel shared in terms of trying to find a way to allow Jews to milk cows on Shabbat when there wasn't the possibility of having it be done by non-Jews, and it was financially central and important to the settlement of the land of Israel at the time. And that is a Tshuva day for the 16th of Nisan. Have a great Pesach. And I forgot to thank David Achaz and Rabbi Jack Rowitz and the OU for hosting this series. I appreciate your being here. Have a great day and a great Pesach.